Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. And now, another actual five-star iTunes review of the podcast, read by Adam's buddy, Oswaldo.
Start my day, all listen to Adam and the gang. Robert, they take in the going in the country. Low Adam, sorty about the childhood that related.
Word. Go to iTunes, rate and review the podcast, and maybe Ozzy will butcher your review, too. Now, back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Colleen Noir is here. I saw him on Bill Maher about 4 or 5 weeks ago in the prestigious spot at the beginning where you sit in, where you get to sit in and do a one-on-one where Bill puts you because you're big time and or you would argue with everyone if you went to the panel. So good to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
So let's talk guns. I think you have a pretty good group to talk to here because everyone here is fairly agnostic. Like we're not in really one camp or the other. I'm a great believer in sort of, I'd rather focus on what bad people do with guns rather than blame the guns, but all right. Misconceptions. What are some of the big misconceptions?
Well, mechanically, generally speaking, is the distinction between an assault rifle and an AR-15. Mm-hmm. So in some of these more public shootings that we've had where a rifle was used, those are AR-15s. That is the civilian version of an assault rifle, which is what soldiers use. Mm-hmm. And the distinction being with an assault rifle, you pull the trigger once and it will completely deplete the magazine.
As fast as you hold it back, full automatic.
So imagine if you had 30 rounds in a magazine. You pull the trigger once, you could dispense all 30 of those rounds by pulling the trigger once and holding it.
Yeah, I've talked to some special ops guys and stuff, and they just go, yeah, we never set ours to full automatic because it's a waste. It's like they want to hit their target. They don't want to have to refill it every 1.3 seconds or whatever it takes. You go full automatic, and you're through your whole clip in 2 seconds, right?
And I think largely the reason why people make such a big deal about it is because we're kind of a victim of our own it's partly the theatrics of seeing a fully automatic gun go. You know, it's pretty grandiose. It's like, oh my gosh, it's loud and it's rapid. It's very quick. While at the same time seeing what we see in the movies, you know, and so people tend to correlate fully automatic with more lethality.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So there are more. How many guns are out there in circulation as far as we know here in the United States?
We're pushing or past 400 million.
Right. So Ted Nugent has 200 million.
Right, and then
there's everyone else who has one gun. No, it is. It's a weird number, but I think the average gun owner has like 11 guns or something. Like there's, it's a thing. It's like I'm into cars. Yeah. I got a bunch of cars. I don't have 1.5 cars. I have a bunch of cars. Wait, do they know what the average guy? I mean, the guy who's into it has.
You know, there's a bunch of different stats. There's some stats out there. Like Bill Maher even brought it up. The idea that the vast majority of the collection of firearms are in a very small number of people's hands. And generally speaking, most people have maybe one or two guns. I think personally, it's kind of hard to say because there are so many guns that are just inherently unaccounted for.
Right.
In terms of just, you know, like you could take all the surveys you want, but at the end of the day, there's still kind of this idea of I'm not going to let you know what guns or how many guns I have.
My sort of take on it is, no matter what rules you lay down, like, hey, this is a gun-free zone, will be respected by all the guys driving the Priuses with the coexist bumper sticker, but it's not going to be respected by the guy who's a homicidal maniac. Like, all that says to him is, hey, happy hunting. Like, this is a gun-free zone.
Mine will be the only gun out of this roof.
Feels like a soft target to me. The advertising that it's a gun-free zone seems like the worst idea ever.
I think it's a terrible idea. However, it is definitely an idea that a lot of people evolve into. So I think what tends to happen is you get people who don't own firearms and know very much about them. They never carry them. They don't have them. So their mindset is very, very much in their head, not reality. And so once people start to get into firearms and carry guns and do so legally, it's like, well, damn, the only thing really stopping me from carrying this gun in here is my decision to carry legally. If I really just wanted to carry a gun in here, I could. No one searched me. I didn't go through a metal detector. And it's a reality that doesn't really strike you until you actually start carrying a gun for a lot of people. And so that's why I think there are a lot of people out there who think that you could put a sign on a window and it would somehow magically prevent somebody who understands as a criminal, you know, I'm going to go here and commit carnage. The last thing I'm worried about is breaking the law that tells me I'm not allowed to bring my gun in here. I'm about to go shoot a bunch of people.
Yeah, if you don't kill yourself or not killed by a SWAT team member and you go to court, the part where you brought your gun into a gun-free zone is going to be way down. They're going to talk about all the people you murdered. And probably parking as well, if it happens in L.A. Parking will be first.
Yeah.
And then we'll get to the part where you brought your car into a gun-free zone, but you'll be up for the death penalty before that. To get to that part. So it doesn't make sense to me. But what are some of your thoughts? I think these school shootings are something that really captures the imagination, for lack of a better term, of America. It's like that's the one where we really go, that is our sort of on land shark attack. Yeah. You know, it's like, it's never going to happen statistically to you or your kid, but I'm not going out in that water, man. Shark attack. Like that shooting at a school, man, that freaks everybody out. And so my take is sort of statistically, it's not going to happen to my kids. But if somebody said, here's my plan, I would listen. Do you have thoughts about what goes on school campuses?
So with the school shootings, as you pointed out, they are statistically very marginal. And I hate saying that because the consequences when they do happen are horrific, right?
Sure.
But I do think with the school shootings, what it does is it forces people to confront their vulnerability or the vulnerability of the thing that they love the most, which is their kids. Right. Because we think that we send our kids off to these institutions and they're essentially safe havens, and as well as they should be. But, you know, we come to realize that, man, like, we can do everything and something can still go wrong. And we may not be as protected against violence in the way that we may have thought we were, especially if I have a very utopic perspective on the world. Or in the cities and the places that I live, because these school shootings are happening in places where people least expect it, right?
I know.
Do you think school shootings are like an existential crisis? Like, what can be done? I, like you said earlier, the carnage. I think we're all on the same page. We just want less of the carnage. What common sense, realistic things can be done to stop either the wrong people? I want every law-abiding, responsible gun owner to have as many guns as they want.
Yeah.
I don't want the crazy people and the bad people to get them. What can we do instead of being obstructionist, which you have to admit the NRA can be a little obstructionist when it comes to this kind of stuff. What can we do? What can be done to stop carnage?
So my mindset goes to, okay, there's already a problem. So I start at the ground level, right? So I say, well, we need to harden the schools. That's my first thought process, because what you're asking me is something that's going to have to take time to get to.
Sure.
And then, as you pointed out, a lot of times with respect to parenting, for instance, which would pretty much solve a lot of the violence issues that we tend to have in this country.
Parenting?
Yeah.
Yes. It factors in. Yes. Yeah. It factors but in.
That will help things 18 years down the road.
Exactly.
That's going to happen in the ensuing.
And I think
it could help tomorrow as well if everyone got off the fucking shit. Oh, hey, find me for shits and giggles. Somebody asked my favorite Maxine Waters what was the problem with all the rise in gangbanging shootings and stuff going on in Los Angeles. She had some very succinct answers. You can find that. It just reminded me about that. But yes, so parenting would be nice. But go ahead.
No, so I say, if we look at, for instance, like we take for instance Chicago. Right, the violence that's happening in places like Southside Chicago. They have a ton of shootings in Southside Chicago. When was the last school shooting in Southside Chicago?
No one's at school.
So there you go.
That's not fair.
They're all shooting each other.
But let's take into account the people who are in school, right?
All right.
So we don't have those shootings, but there are tons of shootings that are happening outside of the school,
right?
And so one of the distinctive factors is, those schools tend to have metal detectors.
Good point.
Right? There are tons of guns around, but they have metal detectors. But when I bring up the idea of metal detectors, say, for instance, in this last shooting.
It's bad optics. It just looks
like. Well, yeah, because no one wants, like, again, no one wants
to. Kids feel like
no one wants to admit that there's this problem.
I don't, you know, my feeling, and that's a very astute point, which is guns everywhere, shooting everywhere, but not at the school. Maybe they get it out of their system before on their way to school. Like, hey, who you want to shoot a gun? My arm's tired.
Again?
My trigger finger's
sore.
Gosh, it's
8:30. Come at me after lunch.
It's not funny. My point is this. Yeah, those schools are hardened, and they have metal detectors, and they always do that thing where it's like, hey, if it could happen here, it could happen everywhere. Well, probably not in a place that's got a problem with violence and metal detectors. Now, in terms of metal detectors, you go through buildings in... Anyone has gone to a building in Manhattan. Anyone's gone to an airport to get to Manhattan. I mean, that's the craziest part about... arguing about ID that was always funny is like when you go up to the NPR building and do an interview, you have to show them your ID and get a badge and go through a detector. It's like, you guys have it in your own lobby. Why can't we? Why not to have it to vote? Like, come on now.
Who gets to be safe?
So we are getting pretty comfortable with passing through these metal detectors as a kind of daily part of life. Again, you know, flying to New York and just make your rounds in New York. Go to Sirius XM and go to this, go to Fox, go to CNN or whatever. Right. It's all through the security. So I agree with you. Like, let's harden it up. Yeah. Let's just get that.
Because I think there's also an inconsistency of philosophy for people who are like, oh, I don't want to make the kids feel like they're in a prison. But some of y'all live in gated communities.
Yeah, you should have seen North Hollywood High. That was a prison. They had bars up on every window. It would look like an institution. The food was worse.
Because what is prison but a gated community?
That's right. Wow. Right.
But I mean, look, we live in the age of Apple. Get somebody from Apple to design the damn metal detectors and make them look pretty.
Right. Yeah. Right.
No, do
ergonomic.
No, do a thing. Let me tell you that this half of the show, brought to you by TommyJohn.com/AmonGeico. Geico.com. Yeah, do a thing where you get something that's cool and, you know, got good vibes and ponies on it or something. And then you just do a community fundraiser, you know, bake-off, charity basketball game, like whatever it is. Like just, you know, rustle up the $2,800 or whatever the unit cost or $5,000 or whoever. Figure out a way to make a sort of cheapish, inexpensive sort of one that had some ergonomics to it.
Right.
And then just harden it up.
Can I ask you this follow-up question? Because I agree with you. I would love to. My 2-year-old daughter goes to daycare, and it is a hard target. It's very hard to get in, even if you know the gate code. But my follow-up thought is that for the people who want to cause carnage, they want to cause mass carnage, their first thought is a school, a very soft target. Let's harden them up. Great. That's awesome. Less school shootings. Wouldn't that person then be like, all right, I'm going to go shoot up the Trader Joe's, or I'm going to go shoot up the library?
Well, LAPD shoots up the Trader Joe's.
Whatever the next soft target is, would it not be smarter to look at the other end of that equation, which is let's keep guns out of the hands of the wrong people?
Now, on paper, that sounds amazing.
It does. Right? Can it be done?
Yeah. But I
think it's dismissive to say it sounds good on paper. Let's make it good in real life.
I was getting at is...
Sorry.
You're good. The conversation definitely needs to happen, right? And so my biggest critique is, on a national stage, that conversation isn't really... It's not a conversation. It's a political sparring match.
It's grandstanding.
Exactly. So, yeah, so let's talk those points out. The problem is we're not going to figure them out on sound bites on cable news. Right, so let's
podcast for that.
Exactly. So, like when people like to mention like mental health, like there needs to be a mental health evaluation. So I say, okay, let's have that conversation. And so I start asking questions. I say, okay, well, what's going to preclude somebody from owning a firearm based on their mental stability? Mm-hmm. Is somebody who's dealing with anxiety going to be precluded? You know, just because you have anxiety doesn't mean you inherently
need a list of actual off limits, on limits.
Exactly. And so then, but then my question then becomes, what does that really do after the fact? Because let's say, for instance, someone is perfectly fine and normal, and then something sets them off based on some predisposition that they had and we didn't know they had. And so now they still have those guns, and then they go out and they commit mass carnage. So then what do we do after that? Are we going to say, all right, like that's the thing. It's a slippery slope that runs us all the way down to the ultimate conclusion of ban all guns.
At a certain sad point, there has to be an acceptable, like, you can't, you know, the sad reality is you really could never prevent all of it. So
born identity.
What's that?
Born identity. Yeah,
exactly.
We'll be fine.
That's right.
Don't worry about it.
Well, I mean, I think the idea, so for instance, like, not here because I'm precluded from carrying a firearm here because my license isn't recognized. But when I'm in Texas, I carry a gun on me almost 90% of the time. However, I don't carry the gun thinking that I'm absolutely going to be able to protect my life. I just want to have a fighting chance.
It increases your chances.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
If you ever been to the water park with Colin, it is awesome. Got that.
Sidearm.
Strapped on.
That's right.
Looks it's good in his trunks.
I gotta
going
say,
down the slide.
I gotta say, I've mastered the art of carrying. I'm pretty sure I can figure out a way to carry it.
I'd love to see it. I know where I'd keep mine. In the front, not in the back. Back, you could be mistaken for something horrible. Front.
Stitch your tail.
Oh, God.
All right. Any, do you have some Maxine Waters thing out there?
Oh, we're going over. We
You'll find it. You're good.
Any other specific keywords?
Somebody just interviewed her. It was a while back, I think. I want to know about the increase in gang violence.
Is it? Does this
she
look
was
familiar?
She was looking into it.
Just
I just heard the audio, but oh, okay. Probably it. Let's hear it. Let's hear it for fun.
Well, okay, well,
are
we'll
you,
cue
you
it
can
up.
You can fix that. You'll find it. I'll tell you about Tommy John first. Summer's here, man. You're gonna hit the water park with your pistol. I was in the pool last night with my Tommy Johns, and I'll tell you why. A, I like to give my nanny a little something, something. You know, a little eye candy.
Lucky Olga.
Call her bonus.
Shouldn't all be work. You know what I mean?
You can have fun at the job.
But I tell you, man, it was hot. I got down in my Tommy John's. I was playing with the kids in the pool, and they dry super fast. You can outsmart the heat with your men and women's underwear. Cool cotton underwear from Tommy John, and the fabric dries four times faster. Keeps you three times cooler.
How many times?
Three times,
three fool. Times, fool.
Yeah, then traditional cotton, no swamp-like conditions down below. Tommy John's moisture-wicking fabrics pull the perspiration right off of your body. Backed by the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. Find your oasis with the new cool cotton from Tommy John. No ifs, ands, or swamp butts. What about it, Dawson?
Hurry to TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam.
All right, let's see. I'm doing Kimmel tonight, if you're listening to this on Thursday. And, God, it's a busy damn day. Got the pod doing Kimmel and then doing a thing with Oscar De La Hoya and Mickey Ward where we're breaking down the Ward
fight.
Breaking down the Ward Gotti fight.
The trilogy or like the first fight?
I think we're breaking down the first fight. Gotti would be there, but he died in like Puerto Rico when he was hanging on a purse by his neck that they thought was suicide, but they also blame his like Puerto Rican wife or something. And there's a lot of, it's a little tough in places don't really have laws to try to get to the bottom of crime. You know, it's like, the cops showed up. They said everything was cool and they went home. Like, oh, where's the evidence? Oh, they ate it. Okay. It's tough when someone you love dies somewhere that doesn't place fast and truth with fast and loose with the truth and rules and stuff. Yeah. You never really get to the bottom of it. But it was I think the family always kind of blamed the wife. Mm-hmm. And they never could figure out that he hung himself on like a purse.
Oh, what do you want to ban purses now?
Then only criminals will carry purses.
That's right.
I think it's criminal for men to carry.
That's a good point.
All right, we'll see what Maxine has to say about the increase in gang banging. Now, let's see if she works the family into this.
This is from 2003.
Okay, here we go. Also, you said the generation would be fixed by now. Sorry, go ahead. When you're ready,
about
Max.
A week ago, and he said that 77th Division was the gang capital of the United States, and your district, or 77th Division, is mostly in your district. How does that make you feel as a congresswoman that the chief of police is actually saying, in other words, that your district is the gang or the crime or murder capital of the United States?
Well, let me just say this. The 35th Congressional District, which most people don't know its boundaries, includes Gardena, Hawthorne, Lawndale, Westchester, all of the airport area, parts of South Central Los Angeles. And, of course, we have gang problems in parts of my district, as we have gang problems in the Ramparts. One time they were saying that the Ramparts was the gang capital of the world. I think sometimes when law enforcement is attempting to try and focus in and describe what is going on, oftentimes their descriptions are not exact. They are more general than not. I accept the fact that there are gang problems in South Central Los Angeles and in the 77th Division, and I accept the fact that there needs to be more work, more resources. I work with gang members. I have for many, many years. Right down the street from here, I created a program called Community Bill. I was the first one in public housing projects to create Project Bill, and so I know a lot of the past gang leaders, many of whom we have mainstreamed, who are homeowners now, who are not gangbanging anymore. And we're trying to get the OGs to come in and deal with the young people, the ones who are 14 and 15 years old. They don't have the kind of leadership that we have among the older ex-gang members. And so all of this work must be done. It requires resources. People are coming at it in a lot of different ways.
Hey,
nobody's got the answer. But
remember the part where I said somebody told her gangbang has gone up? That would be the question he asked.
Okay.
Not her reasonable answer.
Her reasonable answer. What was her answer?
I don't think there was
one. It was a very political answer.
Yeah, it was just her just late naming facts and all things that she's personally done.
She took the scenic route.
Well, it's been 15 years. To Brian's point, we could have...
The generation could have wiped out the problems.
Kind of a bunch of anecdotal dismissiveness.
Yeah. I do like the part where someone goes... Hey, your district is a piece of shit. And they go, yeah, well, so are other.
Have you seen Rampart?
You seen neighboring districts? Because they're so shitty, too. Yeah. Hey, Pacoima's a piece of shit. Hey, have you seen Van Nuys? That's a piece of shit. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well,
guess we're done here.
Mission accomplished here. Shay, how about Beirut? You ever been out of the country? There are all kinds of places that are a piece of shit.
It's a race to the bottom.
Let's focus on that. Yeah.
Did that sound like the audio that you were recalling?
It kind of sounded like the guy was talking to him, but he asked specifically why it has gone up.
All right.
That would be, your clue will be in the question.
Okay, we got it.
Oh. Okay.
Now I'm angry because... Why didn't we listen to that? All right, here it is. Sorry.
Okay, Los Angeles had about 650-plus homicides last year, and it's more than we've had in a long time.
Yes.
What do you think are some of the reasons why not just homicides and violence went up, but specifically gang violence has increased in the last couple years in L.A.?
I don't know. And going out on the street and talking with young people about why gang violence appears to have increased, I'm told that a lot of it is about retaliation. That now what you have is young people who have been shot or killed over a long period of time. Some of their relatives may have been incarcerated. They have come back, and that this is what it's all about. We don't know for sure what it's all about. But one thing we do know is...
I got theories. Possibly families. Possibly dads not being present. I don't know. I like her theory that a lot of these guys are being paroled and shooting more people, but I don't feel like it's the crux of the problem.
I think there's some legitimacy in her first statement. The rest of it was garbage, but in terms of retaliation.
I agree, but I like a world where the family stay intact. We don't have gangbangers. I believe it's much easier to become a gang member when you don't have a dad.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the product of a single parent home.
I'm the product of like a half parent home. I don't want to be a one upper. You and Gavin Newsom. Remember, he came from the wrong side of the tracks. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it can be done. I'm saying statistically.
No. I wasn't saying it from the standpoint of saying, look at me, I did it, and you know,
too
everybody
late.
Else can do it. No. It was more so to prescribe some type of empathy that I have in understanding the limitations that come with being raised in a single parent home.
I'm saying I would like politicians to discuss the number one reason there are gangs, which is no dads around, versus the other reasons and never the number one reason. I don't know. I'm sure Maxine thinks it'll hurt her run at a reelection or something. It's confused. I also don't want I don't want any politician when you go, we have an increase in herpes or we have an increase in gang violence. I don't want you to go, yeah, we don't know. I want you to
find
go,
out.
Too many
reasons.
People having
it's
unprotected sex, and we need to put more condoms in more bars or something. I would like something other than, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Who knows? Nobody knows.
One reason, perhaps.
I do think there's always, this is going to be bad.
Yeah.
It sounds bad. But it's almost kind of a necessary apathy on their part, because what it necessarily, like maintaining or kind of turning a blind eye to that level of violence allows them to keep pushing the narrative that you need to continue to depend on us to give you what you need to fix it. And it almost kind of, in a certain way,
Well, that's the number one thing is like, we need more resources. So you go, why is the school failing? And they go, we need more resources. Like, you don't think we spend enough per student in LA Unified or Chicago or whatever? Mm. They oftentimes spend more than ones are doing. So where's the resources? Yeah, their thing is more resources. Mm. And my thing is like more intact families that do homework with kids. Like that's, so what do you, that's going to help.
So what do you think is the genesis or the catalyst for the lack thereof?
The lack there of the family?
Of the family, yeah, or the destruction of the family, of the family structure in some of these areas.
I think people will do, I think the same person is capable of a lot and a little, mm-hmm. kind of depending on what they need to do and what they have to do. So I got a real first up close look at this because my mom was a welfare person and was like a food stamp person. Mm-hmm. And we did live in a freebie, albeit pile of shit house, but we did live in a free house. And I sort of saw what my mom couldn't do given just enough, stay here for free, and how it depleted her almost immediately. Like the self-worth part of life. This thing where you go, hey, self-esteem movement, feel good about yourself. No one's like you. You know, you should be, feel like you're number one. You can't lay that on anyone. You have to go out and work. You have to get that paycheck. You have to, like, take a little sweat off your brow. You got to get your hands a little dirty. You got to step back and go, hey, I built that barn. Or now I hung that drywall today. Or whatever your job is. Like, people, here's what I think of people. I think of people like, you know that guy, he's 71, but he's in fucking great shape, and you can't believe how often he works out and all that kind of stuff. And then someone goes, you hear about Irv? And I'm like, what happened? Oh, he slipped in the shower and he broke his hip or whatever. And you go, oh, really? Oh, he's been in bed. Yeah, it's been in bed for like a month now. And you go see him in bed, and he's like completely come undone. Like, he looks really old. Like, he got old.
Frail.
The dude that didn't age got really old really fast simply by stopping his crazy routine of I hit the gym, and then I swim the laps, and then I volunteer at the center, whatever. That guy got off his game for 5 weeks and he looks like he's clinging to life. And you take somebody and you go, no work. No work. We'll just give you them. You don't have to. And then someone else will go, yeah, but how are they going to do it? You have to give them the right to struggle, the right to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And people, whether they're in Chicago or trapped on a desert island with Tom Hanks, be surprised what people do real fast. Yeah. I mean, to get it together. How much innovation, how much hard work, and how much whatever you do. And historically, we've done as a nation. Poor people worked, their neighbors like gathered around, they helped, you know, neighbors shared stuff with neighbors and churches and communities. And everyone came in and kind of picked up the slack, so to speak. And when we created this big welfare state, we ripped all that dignity away from everybody, and they just went, fuck it. And now they don't know what they can do. And we did the same thing with the American Indians. We're like, here's a chunk of land. Here's a stipend. Go ahead. Everyone's got diabetes and overweight. Like, but I would do the same thing, is what I'm saying.
It kind of incentivizes mediocrity.
Yeah, it rips away the dignity of work that I believe. And we ripped away the social stigma, which is, hey, how many kids you have, dude? Yeah. Three or four. You don't know? Where are they? Yeah. Why aren't you taking care of them? Who's paying for these kids? Oh, they're taken care of. Like, no, you should be, and we should be judging, and we should create a society that keeps that judgment alive so that you're sort of not forced, but compelled
I think
to raise your
kids. Like,
kids.
For instance, when I have the discussions on the gun debate, the other side, as I call it, right, who are largely against my position, they like to use a lot of shaming tactics. I can't stand shaming tactics. However, there is some legitimacy to the idea of creating a standard, which is essentially kind of a shaming tactic in and of itself. Because it's like, if you don't adhere to this certain standard, then socially you're going to be kind of slightly ostracized.
An accountability standard.
Exactly.
Well, and also, like, I think Bill Clinton did it, but I'll screw up all the numbers. But when some politician goes, hey, man, everyone's got 6 months worth of welfare, and then you got to fucking get a job because that'll be it in 6 months. Magically, everyone finds a job in 6 months and a day. They figure it out. Like, they just, we all have done it. This is what we do.
The size of the bowl.
Yeah, we figure out. If we just go, hey, you have another kid, you get another check, well, then you have another kid.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where we're at.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard cases where, you know, certain people would say they work part-time. They're like, hey, I can't work over a certain amount of hours because then I'll lose my benefits on this government program.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, whoa.
Okay. It's essentially a tough love that coaches, teachers, society used to really employ. And it's not comfortable. And it doesn't feel kind, but it's super effective.
My mom did it to me. She was an ass.
What'd she do?
My mom was an ass. And I think some of it was due to her overcompensating because mm-hmm. she understood, you know, the limitations she had as a woman raising a man. So where I didn't become this kind of stereotypical mother's boy in the sense of I was always looking to my mom for her to do stuff for me. She never did anything for me. And I just thought she was cruel when I was younger. But what it did was as I got older, I understand – you know, it taught me how to do things for myself.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so I think, and granted, you know, that's very anecdotal, right? But I think there's something to be said about that in terms of, you know, creating certain limitations in terms of how much you do for someone or aid someone to a degree where they become completely, utterly dependent. And I think to some degree, there needs to be a certain level of that tough love that says, okay, look, I understand your situation and here's how I'm going to help you up until this point. But at a certain point, you're going to have to figure this out.
Agreed. All right. Why don't we take ourselves a quickie break? We'll come back and do the news. And Colleen, you hang out and chime in.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, Roseanne Barr will sit down with Sean Hannity on Fox News to talk about the cancellation of her ABC show. Although the comedian has a lot to say about it on Twitter and even attempted to interview herself in a YouTube video, this will be her first one-on-one TV interview. I do have the clip of her attempting the self-interview about Valerie Jarrett, and it is the most Roseanne thing that Roseanne could ever do.
Was she screaming, I didn't know the bitch was black or something like that?
Hold tight.
Oh, okay, sorry for stepping on that.
I'm trying to talk about Iran. I'm trying to talk about Valerie Jarrett wrote the Iran deal.
I know, but you've told me this 300 times. Do you know that if...
That's what my tweet was about.
I know. You've explained this literally 300 times.
I thought the bitch was white. God damn it. I thought the bitch was white. Fuck.
Now, let me ask you this.
If she does the same thing on Hannity, I'll be so happy.
Is this we got an element of like, you know, when they try to prosecute the 80-year-old Don, you know, the crime syndicate guy.
He's so feeble.
And he's like, I rode a hat rack in today. I'm sorry I'm late. And you're like, what? You rode a hat? Oh, he's nuts.
It's like Uncle June on Sopranos.
Yeah, we can't prosecute. Yeah. Is she trying to do a little cuckoo in the Cocoa Puff so we can go...
It doesn't seem like a bit. I think she's frustrated and just going full Roseanne.
It's just what she wants. All people right. Like you, other Jewesses, to side.
I saw that. I didn't know it was a self-interview. So initially I thought, okay, maybe there may be some credence to that. But then now that I realize it was a self-interview, I'm like, yeah, I think I'm going to go there.
Crazy like a fox.
But I watched the minute or so leading up to it, and I don't know if it's her son or I don't know who it is. Somebody's interviewing her, whatever. And she's just so frustrated that it doesn't seem like she planned out, okay, you just keep asking me inane questions and I'm just going to scream at the end. I think in her head, she's in a prison. She just feels so misunderstood for whatever reason.
And she's also an actress.
Yeah.
Is she, though? That doesn't really help. I've seen Roseanne.
Now, my take with this, if she's really looking for redemption or what would be helpful, maybe Sean Hannity will bring it up. Her big argument is, I made this Planet of the Apes joke, but I didn't know the person I was making about was black. And I sort of get it. Like, I don't know Valerie Jarrett. When you look at her, I don't know if everyone goes, she's definitely black. I wish we had a real black guy in here now who could answer this. The NRA black guy.
I know this one dude.
But if it's true that she didn't know, she's like, I didn't know she was black. I didn't know she was black. I thought she was white. If that's true, that could help her case a lot in a racial joke, right? Because how's it now racial if that's, you didn't know? Would she do a lie detector? And if she really wanted out, and it'd be a good pay-per-view.
The only
thing this has come up before.
The lie detector test,
for it.
You have to know you're lying in order to trip. If she's an insane person, she, you know what I mean?
Right,
insane
but she,
people will
she
not-
made a Planet of the Apes joke about an African-American woman. Then she went back and said, I thought she was white. I feel like you know whether you think someone's white or think someone's black when you're making a joke that has to do with Planet of the Apes. I think even though she's nuts or acting nuttier, I feel like they could administer that. We could get some closure.
Yeah. And pay-per-view.
Yeah.
That's the way.
All the money goes to charity.
Yeah.
I would watch. Mm-hmm.
All right. It just struck me. You may not know, or you may know, but we have someone here from the NRA. What's up with this Bettina person? What is
Maria.
Yeah. I don't know anything about that.
Okay. I was afraid you were going to say that.
Who? What about
the Russian? The Russian
infiltrator
who was indicted.
I can't figure it out. She was here to said she was starting like a Ukrainian NRA or something like that. Or
yeah, there's link supposedly. It's intrigue, but no one knows because it's sealed and everything. I didn't know if you knew. No,
and Colleen, I believe you. You're like.
I honestly don't even concern myself with it, to be honest.
All I know, she's redheaded.
Yep.
And then they thought they had a picture of her, like in the Oval Office, but turned out to be another fucking redhead. All look alike.
Ginger.
Anyway, right. Sorry, where were we?
Well, this is pretty exciting. NBC News reports that a large reservoir of water has been found deep beneath the frozen surface of Mars near the planet's south pole, according to a new paper by Italian researchers published in the journal Science. The discovery caps decades of debate over whether water actually exists on Mars. The newfound lake is likely to be extremely cold, extremely salty. Those are not, quote, ideal conditions for life to form, according to a planetary scientist, but they did add microbial life has been found in such environments on Earth near the Antarctica. So apparently it's not out of the question. This could be our first real evidence that there is life on Mars.
Hey, Dawson, you did a mashup with Roseanne and Jim Croce's song?
Oh, yeah, Colleen, just so you know, we find these rants a little more palatable when they're set up against 1970s soft rock.
Let's hear it.
You know the song, Colleen?
It's favorite.
I'm trying to talk about Iran. I'm trying to talk about Valerie Jarrett wrote the Iran deal.
Well, I know it's kind of late.
God damn it!
I hope I didn't wake you.
Fuck!
But what I've got to say can't wait.
That's what my tweet was about.
I knew you'd understand.
God damn it!
Every time I tried to tell you, the words just came out wrong. So I have to say I love you.
Fuck!
In a song.
I thought the bitch was white!
Yeah, I know it's kinda strange.
Fuck!
Every time I'm near you.
God damn it!
I run out of things to say.
Fuck!
I know you'd understand.
God damn it!
Every time I try to tell you, the words just came out wrong. So I have to say I love you in a song.
I thought the bitch was wide.
Awesome, everybody.
That was glorious.
That was.
That's great.
Well, Sam's never been funnier.
Put that up at Corolla.com, and you can share it with your friends. All right, let me tell you about Castrol Edge before we move on with the news here. Tech advances made engines smaller, and they got to work a little harder now because they need better mileage, and it's taking smaller displacement. Throwing some turbos on them and working them. That's why you need the Castrol Edge. It's made with liquid titanium, man. It is three times better than conventional or even full synthetic oil, at least the competitor's full synthetic. And you can check out a cool video they have, Castrol USA YouTube page. Really cool video. And I recommend it highly. Castrol USA YouTube page. All right, what else we got?
Well, this will dovetail nicely into the next story. Yoko Ono's next album revisits 13 songs from her past. Due October 19th on her son Sean's label, Warzone is Ono's response to the tension of present-day life. She says, quote, the world is so messed up. Things are very difficult for everybody. It's a war zone we're living in. Now she's 85 years old, by the way. Ono shows no signs of slowing down or pulling back on her activism. And though 12 of the 13 songs are her compositions, Warzone closes with her late husband John Lennon's signature solo work, Imagine. For your listening pleasure, we do have a snippet of Warzone.
She's singing Imagine?
No. I think at the end, John's singing.
Oh, God, that's such a beautiful song. What's she going to do to it?
This is one of her creations.
But all you want from us is some pillow talk. Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up! Hold your life. Warzone!
Why doesn't she just sing in Japanese?
Be nice.
It would be better.
Was she singing or was that an orgasm?
That was...
Easy.
She needs to move back and entertain. What about she's depriving all her countrymen of all her entertainment?
Like, they're probably cool with it.
I mean, like I'd say to like, hey, Yoko, I bought you a one-way ticket to Tokyo. Now, here's the deal. You've been blowing us away with your entertainment for pretty near 40 years now.
Changing the world.
But what about the folks back home in Japan?
Depriving them.
Yeah.
Every time you sing in English, it's a crime.
Yeah, you get back, touch with your roots, and head on back, and go sick over there.
I'm still convinced that was an orgasm. I accidentally caught on.
That is it.
So talented.
Okay. You know, the saddest thought I've ever had?
Oh, God.
She's the most famous Japanese person. That's the saddest thing I've ever thought of. Like, oh, there's like, oh, what about George Takei or something?
I know.
I know it's a little bit of slim pickings, but I mean, in the United States.
Yeah.
You saw a picture of her, you know who it was.
I wanted
you
so
You mentioned
bad,
her yeah. name, and I think everyone would know what it is.
Yeah.
And she's utterly talentless. Like, she's devoid of all talent. She's nothing. I mean, the theme song to Wayne's World was 1,000 times better.
More creative and better than that.
Well, that's what it was like. Warzone, party time,
excellent.
Like, she is the most famous Japanese person in the United States, possibly the world, and she is... completely talentless. Like, never entertained a person. There's nothing.
When you said that initially, I was like, no. And I racked my brain, and she's probably the most famous Japanese person.
And it's not just you're talentless, so you go ahead and kind of sit in your corner and crochet the rest of your life. This is aggressive. Mm. Egregious.
Yes.
Pat Morita, maybe, but even now.
It's always so sad.
R.I.P.
But if you said
Mr. Miyagi,
it also speaks
insulting.
To the Japanese in the entertainment field. Like, you guys got to up your fucking game. You know what I mean?
Christy Yamaguchi.
It's tough.
The fact that you get to A. Arnold from Happy Days, the fact that you even get there that fast, you know what I mean?
Ichiro would probably be second. And again, that's not anywhere near as famous as Yoko Ono.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's, I'm trying to...
Doesn't bode well.
Right.
Is that going to be streaming on Spotify, or is that...
Wherever fine music is
that
sold.
That is streaming on Spotify.
Whew.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a remake of a 1996 song she wrote called Warzone.
Shut up.
Yeah.
It needed to be heard again.
That's the updated version.
I think Tessa has a new lullaby.
Oh, God.
Warzone.
All right, well, this was literally just handed to me.
Chrissy Yamaguchi, born American. Sorry.
Still Japanese.
Yeah, I would counter if I could.
Trust me, we'd love to counter.
I'd love to counter.
Kobayashi!
Yeah, you brought that up.
The hot dog guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not helping.
All right. But, I mean, see, it's... See, I will say something positive about the brothers here. You know, if you go, who's the most famous black person in America? Then someone will go, Tiger Woods? And I go, oh, no, Michael Jordan. No, Beyonce. No, no, Oprah. But you don't go, you don't go Michael Jordan and then go, what was the guy from The Fresh Prince who had the dance?
Yeah.
That's what we do with Japanese. Yeah. We got no second place.
Yeah,
it's a big gap.
There's no fucking second. Yeah. Who's second?
Bruce Lee Chinese.
Yeah, it's rough.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's the most famous Japanese person shot. On the planet.
She's 85, though, so...
Who does she seed the crown to?
Yeah, who picks up that slack?
Nobody. Just cats you back over. That's the sound. You have to back over another cat to really relive her majesty.
Oh, man.
God, it's so weird. I did. I was at a showing. I was at a private, like, music critics only, whatever, Ben Folds, you know, little, he's going to play the piano and blah, blah, blah. And I had the music critic lady in front of me, and we started talking, and I just said something like, "What's up with Yoko?" And she went, "Oh, I've been to a few of her shows." And I'm always kind of, I'm just waiting, like, okay, I want to know. I'd like to know, I want to change. I can't unlock this mystery. What's going on in my brain about her cannot be, she does shows. Who's going? She said, "Oh, I've been to her shows." And I said, "What goes on at those shows and enlighten me?" And she's like, she just same stuff you see on the, you know, the sound bites and stuff, and gets up there and just kind of wails. And I'm like, "Is it good?" And she's like, "Oh, yeah, yeah." And I'm like, "Really? It sounds good? Well, no." And then it's like, "But it's just her wailing? Yeah, yeah. But you enjoy it? Yeah, yeah. But you like it's good? Well, I mean, you have to admire her guts." I'm like, "No, I don't. No. I don't have to admire her guts. Someone has no ability who takes the stage and starts banging on guitar and wailing, and I don't have to admire their guts. They're wasting my fucking time."
Well, I don't know. I'm a big Kid Cudi fan, and I like hearing him wail and moan.
Find some of him wailing and moaning and see if we can find that.
People just want to see Yoko.
An entire album of Kid Cudi just moaning and droning away.
It was funny that this woman went from, "I really enjoy her," to, "Well, I don't know what the fuck she does, but hey, that takes balls to get up on stage and waste everyone's time that way with no ability at all." Like, okay.
That's what it is. People want to say they saw Yoko Ono do her Yoko Ono thing.
You know who might be more famous?
Godzilla.
Yeah. Might be the only Japanese-born person.
I think that might be a little racist.
It's reptilist.
Wait, he didn't know the bitch was...
He's
black,
from
right?
Japan.
He thought Katsuki was
from
black.
The seas of Japan.
Sorry. All right. Go ahead. One more.
Well, this was just handed to me right now. Chris Hardwick will return as host of AMC's Talking Dead series following an investigation into allegations that he was abusive to former girlfriend Chloe Dykstra. Hardwick will return as the host of The Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead after shows as of August 12th. And here is a press release. It says AMC statement. Following a comprehensive assessment by AMC, working with Ivy Kagan Bierman of the firm Loeb & Loeb, who has considerable experience at law firm.
What name is that?
Ivy Kagan Bierman.
Got Kagan Beer in the same name?
Yeah, hero.
Oh, if he doesn't name his son Pony. I got a real problem with this guy.
My daughter, Party Ball.
Course, Party Ball. Party Ball. Pony Cake. Beerman. Get in there. The Beerman's having a family meeting. Come on now.
Grab the ball and get over here.
Yeah.
He goes on to say, "We take these matters very seriously, and given the information available to us after a very careful review, including interviews with numerous individuals, we believe returning Chris to work is the appropriate step." So he's back.
All right. I don't miss any shows where they talk about the show that came on earlier.
He built an empire on it.
It's a weird thing to me. I don't know.
Sorry, Chris.
But it feels weird. Like, hey, they had this show.
Such a waste of time.
Oh, your show.
Such a waste of time.
Were you a fan of The Walking Dead?
No, I don't watch the show. But I don't watch the second show that's about the first show.
I think it's one of those things where you have to watch the show because I get it, but I can't articulate it.
I hear it's great.
Yeah, but
I got on my list of shows that I'm supposed to watch. I got Homeland,
The Wire.
Oh, The Wire.
Oh, you got current shows?
You haven't watched The Wire?
Well, The Wire. Oh, I'm so frustrated by The Wire.
That's racist. Yeah.
No, that's just blasphemous.
I know. Listen, can I explain this? In the pantheon of Mike August and his weirdness, when we were at the P.F. Chang's in Denver. Mike's guy books a show. We're doing a stand-up show in Denver. And all Mike ever talks about is The Wire. I love The Wire. You got to watch The Wire. The Wire's the best, you know. And then they get it's so gritty. It's so down and whatever. And I'm like, I don't know. I just watch car shows. I don't want to be bummed out. But anyway, so he's like, The Wire, The Wire, The Wire, The Wire for years. And then at some point, we get a waitress from P.F. Chang's. And she's like 23-year-old chick. And I think he's like, hey, don't you recognize this guy? You know, he's pointing to me. And she's like, no. And he's like, I don't have cable. And then I'm like, you don't watch any TV shows? And then she's like, no. And Mike's like, you haven't seen any TV shows? And she goes, oh, the only show I ever watch is The Wire, but that's from my boyfriend's house. And then Mike goes, well, there you go. And she walks away. I'm like, you're not going to. You got nothing to say to the 23-year-old chick who just watches the show you never stop talking about? It's like, bring out some of that pork fried rice. Yeah. It was a weird. The only other weirder time I had at P.F. Chang's is when we were playing a casino. And I was at P.F. Chang's, and they gave us a casino box. Which is, were you there for that, Max Brown? Were you giving like $500 or the casino box?
It was, of course.
Yeah. So I was like, we got to go spend all this money at the P.F. Chang's because we're not going to take the casino box out with us. And then we're sitting there, and some couple who was going to the show tonight, they sent over drinks.
Oh, no.
And I was like, hey, no.
Spend these.
No, send them back and buy them drinks. And they're like, they left. And I'm like, well, then you send these fucking drinks somewhere else and then buy those. And I was like, pointing, no, who bought the drinks? And she was like, pointing at that couple? No, the other couple. Give them their drinks. Tell them we're buying their pork fried rice. It's the weirdest thing in the world when you're in this crazy quest to get rid of your casino
Brewster's Millions
box. Yes, yeah. Sorry. All right, let's bring it home.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, well, your pussy stinks. Gina.
That was the news with Gina Grad.
It may be at the end of that commercial. We don't
know.
We got
to see the 60.
We do.
We
got to see the 60.
You got to watch the 60. Right. We only watch the 15. All right, let me tell you about Geico. Everyone's got something to do. How about you save a ton on your auto insurance at Geico, geico.com. Spend about 15 minutes and save about 15% on your car insurance. You don't have to go anywhere. Slide over to your computer, go to geico.com, and just find out how fast you could be saving tons of money on your insurance. Put that extra money in your pocket, and it'll be the most rewarding thing you do all day at Geico. That is geico.com. All right, let's see. Colin.
Yep.
We can find you on NRA TV.
Yes, sir.
And the show is Noir.
Yeah.
It's N-O-I-R. It's available at NRATV.com. And you can check out the app, and you can subscribe at the YouTube channel. Subscribe at Colin Noir on YouTube. I should say the first name is C-O-L-I-O-R. And
Co-Lion
is how you would think about it. Thanks for coming by.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
I love it. Easy peasy lemon squeezy. And we're going to be doing live podcasts coming up all over the place. Seattle, Moore Theater, September 13th. Adam Ray up on stage with us. That'll be fun. Before that, Ice House, August 29th. Dr. Drew up on stage with us. So that'll be fantastic as well. Go to AdamCarolla.com and find out about all that stuff and check out Corolla Drinks and Chassis and everything else. And check out the podcast Baseball and Chill, and you can check that out at PodcastOneSports.com and the Podcast One app. Until next time, Adam Carolla for Colin and Gina and Bald and Christy saying mahalo. Yeah, I took my beret and I turned it backwards. I was sucking off a dude in the bathroom. All right, what happened?
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Go ahead and subscribe to Take an E. You'll get a weekly dose of inspiration and motivation. Come and see us this Friday night, Thousand Oaks, California, at Borderline Bar and Grill. August 29th, we're in Pasadena at the Ice House with Dr. Drill. And September 13th, Seattle, Moore Theater with Adam Ray. Tickets and info on all the live podcasts, man-free events, books, movies, and more. At AdamCarolla.com.